consume is the message. Money makes a dance. Love is the product. The joke is in. The joke is in. The joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. I shouted out, "Who killed the Kennedys?" And they shouted back, "Who were the Kennedys?" And that's when I realized I was getting old. But Adam Gorightly is back, and we'll be talking with him about his latest book, The Prankster and the Conspiracy, the story of Kerry Thornley and how he met Oswald. That's Lee Harvey Oswald, and inspired the counterculture. But first, let's have a look around. There's Jeff Deal. There's Steve Robles. And Diana Brown is back.
Hello, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to be here. Recently, in an effort to further understand what's being called the Air America Blacklist, I turned to Josh Silver on the blog at HuffingtonPost.com, and he offered up the real story. And according to Josh, it goes something like this. Apparently, 90 major corporations have pulled their advertising from all media outlets featuring Air America programming. Why? Well, good question. Apparently, Josh points out the crime isn't because they are partisan, you know, clearly favoring Big D Democrats, or even that they're somewhat liberal. The crime...
Janine Garofalo.
Well, you know, let's not talk about Steve's sex life right now. Oh. Sorry, Janine. I didn't mean to do that to you. Air America commits a crime... Steve, I'm sure Janine... Okay, I'll call the girl. We'll see what I can do for you, all right? I'll set you up.
Met her once. Never met the
did you?
Go on.
What did she think about Air America?
I didn't really
did she
talk
blacklist
to her
Steve?
About anything.
Of course.
I think I might be more sexually attracted to Al Franken, to tell you the truth. But
okay, now just Al's hurt her hottest. Feelings. Well, speaking of crimes, apparently the crime of Air America is they commit a crime called journalism. And Josh Silver goes on to say... See, Air America gives time to reporting things that are critical of corporations and the powerful politicians they keep in Washington. And then he asks us, what have we learned from this? So what do you guys think we've learned so far from this?
That people are running away from Air America as fast as they can. I think that the fact that they're... you know, their ratings are down the tubes and, you know, they got no money left might be one reason for somebody not to advertise with them anymore. I mean, God damn, it sounds like I'm taking the Republican side.
I was about to say.
So, I mean, how does this become a blacklist exactly?
Well, basically what Silver proposes is that the very fact that, you know, media are concentrated in the hands of massive corporations who are only concerned with profits. Anything that reduces profits or threatens those profits needs to be eliminated.
Or makes no profit.
Or makes no profit. And, you know, a lot of people have responded to Silver's blog. One guy's like, maybe they went away because they're so crappy. Maybe that's their problem. Although someone did point out that they've lost less money than Fox News to date. So
Fahrenheit 9/11 wasn't exactly pro-corporate, but it made plenty of profit. You got to make something that people want
to
hear.
Advertisers.
No, but I'm saying if you have an audience for something that you've made, you can profit off of it.
If these corporations, they do care about politics. Some of them, especially if you're talking about like corporations like Clear Channel and assholes like that, but. Most of them will vote the bottom dollar.
Yeah, if they're doing really great, I think that most of the companies would be happy to advertise. Did Franken's show really do that poorly? I thought I heard.
I don't know.
Actually, I thought I heard figures that he was
that
doing
is a really
pretty
good
well, actually.
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're isolating Franken's particular show or you're judging the success
of the whole
this
network.
Ad hoc.
Well, there are stations that you could go to that would be all Air America. There was one in New York City. I don't know if there was one.
Yeah, but that's not the issue. The issue is that the stations around the country are pulling all of, or the corporations that control these stations are pulling all Air America content.
90 corporations, which is a lot of money to be pulled out. And Silver believes that it's because, you know, Air America does to some degree. He's not saying that, you know, they're not guilty of pontificating from time to time, but they actually do investigative reporting that looks, you know, deeply at politicians and what they're doing. And so he feels that because they are reporting the news as it is truthfully happening, quote unquote, corporations are saying, screw it.
Well, whether it's truthful or not, if it's anti-corporate, I mean, hey, it's just the other side of the coin, right?
Right.
Like, Fox News reports positively on everything corporate, just about. And so that has to contribute to some degree to their success, the fact that they're supported so well.
Right.
Now, if you believe that, then the other side of the coin is true also, that if the network is built, you know, to some significant degree on criticizing the idea of corporations and profits and that they can, you know, they have a, you know, a certain not so great motivation.
They might be inclined to pull out a little bit.
Yeah, of course. Why not? I mean, it's everything's propaganda.
It's all about the money.
Yeah.
One of the things that Silver recommends we take a look at, and go and read the blog. It's definitely, you know, worth reading it. It was co-written by Robert McChesney. He's the co-founder of the Nonpartisan Media Reform Organization. But one of the main points that Silver's making here is that pretty soon everything's going to be on the internet, and you've got cable, and the phone companies are mounting these huge cases to privatize the internet and make them the gatekeepers to all the media. So he suggests, instead of allowing one giant megalocorp all working together to do that, we need to take control of the media. And then he quotes Jon Stewart. He says, we need a media system that will inform and protect America rather than one that is, in the words of Jon Stewart, hurting us. So what do you think?
Well, the problem with the investigative journalism is that it to do it really well is it costs some money, and
exactly
there has to be some profit for some company that puts up the money to do the investigative journalism for investigative journalism to survive,
right?
Which means that there has to be an audience, a high scale audience to allow it to exist, you know, I don't think it looks that great right now. Not that many people watch Bill Moyers, do they?
No, that was one of the points that he made, was that, you know, certainly we're not seeing corporate funding for Bill Moyers.
Very boring dude.
Yeah,
see? I mean, there's no question that
Michael Moore had the same show that Bill Moyers had,
they would
probably a lot of
funding.
People would watch, because he's a funny guy.
This is true.
There's no question that media is hurting us. I mean, but I mean, to say that also, I mean, we're media and we're good.
I'm hurting myself.
Yeah, you're hurting. See, and this is the point that I'm making. The question isn't whether media is hurting us. It's whether we're asking media to hurt us. Is media the fucking, like, leather thong strapped fucking dominatrix who's going to whip us into? My media safe word is Lou Dobbs.
Adam Gorelie is back with us. We talked with him a few weeks back about his wild book about Charlie Manson and his family values. And today we'll be talking with him about his more recent book about Kerry Thornley, the prankster and the conspiracy. And welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
No problem, man. So describe Kerry Thornley as a young Marine and how he developed a friendship with a certain Lee Harvey Oswald.
Kerry was a... In high school in the late 50s, he was a Marine reservist, and this was, once again, the late 50s, and he saw the horizons of the Vietnam War coming around the bend, so he enlisted in the Marines. He had a couple years of active service to get that out of the way, and he was also a budding writer, and so he thought perhaps it would be a venue, too, to have some interesting experience, get to travel around the world a bit. And while in the Marines, getting his basic training at Tsugi Air Force Base in California, that's when he met Lee Harvey Oswald. Previously, Oswald had been in the Japan at Tsugi Air Base, and He had come back to El Toro base at that time, kind of with a cloud over his head. Most of the people coming back from overseas had the rank of at least a corporal, but Oswald came back with a private, and he had this reputation of being kind of this malcontent rabble-rouser who was also into, like to discuss politics and communism in particular, and different philosophies that most people thought was a little weird, but it fascinated Thornley, because Thornley loved debating and talking about debating religions and talking about communism and different philosophies. So the two formed a friendship at that
point. Seems like there was a small group of sort of misfits, outsiders, that were all together in this Marine group that liked to philosophize. And one of them was Lee Harvey, who was a communist, or was flirting with communism, allegedly. And Thornley at that time, I think, was an objectivist, wasn't he? Or was he into the Ayn Randian thing at that point?
He was starting to get into it at that point, but Carey adopted a lot of different beliefs and philosophies over the years, and basically at that point, they had a short, pretty brief friendship with each other that lasted over the course of a couple months, and then Carey went overseas to Atsugi, Japan, where Oswald had previously been, and on on the ship he took across to Japan, he started working on a book at that point, which was called The Idle Warriors, and it was talking about what it was like to be in the Marines that time, at that period, in the malaise and the post-war era, and he developed a composite character for this book that was based on himself and Oswald and a few other Marines that he knew. When Carey got over to Japan, is when he heard about Oswald defecting, and at that point, the Idle Warriors became based primarily, the character of Johnny Shelburne, the protagonist, became based primarily on Oswald, which is kind of one of the first oddities in Thornley's life, that he's writing a book about Oswald 2 years before the Kennedy assassination.
Now, the idea that he's mixing his character with Lee Harvey Oswald, in some ways, this is like your what you write emerges as in magic into the real world, because later on he's taken as a doppelganger for Lee Harvey Oswald. All right.
Yeah, we're getting deep now, but after Carey got out of the Marines, he wanted to experience the world some more, and he ended up, I thought New Orleans would be an interesting place to go. During that same period, later turned out that Oswald was in New Orleans during this same period, involved with Guy Bannister's organization. For those folks out there who are aware of the history behind the JFK assassination.
Anti-Castro group, Guy Bannister.
Yeah. And the movie JFK was basically based upon Jim Garrison's investigation of Bannister's group, and he tied them to the JFK assassination, and that they basically were using Oswald kind of as a fall guy or a patsy during this time. Right. And later on, it came out during the Garrison investigation, later in 67 or so, that Garrison claimed that Thornley was there in New Orleans acting as one of the Oswald doubles, doppelgangers, basically running around in pretending to be Oswald, later to set him up as a lone nut, crazy communist simp running around doing these crazy things.
Now, does Garrison,
like, handing out flyers and screaming about all this stuff.
Does Garrison come up with any real evidence for this, or just they happen to be in the same?
Well, he had.
Well, they were friends, right?
They were friends.
Or they had been friends.
They had been friends. A witness came forward by the name of Barbara Reed, who was a character in the French Quarter. She practiced voodoo and did all these strange things. And she claimed she saw Oswald and Thornley together at a restaurant there. So that was one of the witnesses. And there was some other, at least Garrison claims he had other witness who saw Oswald and Thornley together. Of course, Thornley denied this during that period.
Are there any other characters involved that tie Thornley and Oswald together into the Dallas conspiracy?
Well, that's where it gets a little murky, because later in the 70s, Thornley started claiming that he had contact, that he met David Ferry,
right,
and some of these other players in the assassination. But what makes it a bit confusing is that it appears Kerry might have been suffering from paranoid delusions as time progressed into the 70s. And so it's hard to separate the wheat from the chaff sometimes when you start looking into all of these allegations. But Kerry, at first, denied Garrison's allegation and fought him pretty vehemently. Then later in the 70s, he started having all these memories coming back to him about his time in New Orleans. And as time progressed, he started to believe in Garrison's theories and that Garrison was on the right track.
Well, so talking about suggestibility, this just, from what I got from the book, I mean, this just seemed completely absurd to him at first, that he had been roped into this thing. But he actually went and testified. Was it when Garrison tried to put Ferry on trial or before Congress? He was actually called upon to testify at some point. Thornley.
First, Thornley testified before the Warren Commission.
Right.
Way
right.
Before the Garrison inquiry. Then later, Thornley was called before a grand jury, but he never officially testified, and I don't think he, I'm not sure if he's actually even ever willingly testified before Garrison's committee.
Hmm. So let's talk about Thornley and his intersection with the counterculture, which mm-hmm. is the other theme in the book. And so he and his friends start discordantism based on an idea that comes up in a bowling alley,
mm-hmm.
basically, and way before most people would imagine people would be coming out with such a peculiar amalgamation of psychedelic and surrealistic thinking. Why don't you describe a little bit about that?
The venue of a bowling alley over the years, the Discordians have put a lot of great significance to a bowling alley. And the real reason behind the bowling alley, I later discovered, was that it's a place where these young guys could go and they were able to buy beer, and they stayed open all night, and they could either imbibe of caffeine or beer and exchange all these different whatever were on their mind. And one of them was conversation that started about a Greek goddess of chaos and discord, Eris, also called Discordia. And so these two lads, Kerry Thornley and his friend Greg Hill, whipped up what originally was just an in-joke between themselves, and it kind of grew over the years of this religion Discordia. And as time progressed, other people started picking up on this, and it became a bit of a counterculture phenomena. Would you like to say a few words, Louise?
Yeah, we pronounced it Eris, and she now is the ninth planet in our solar system. Mm.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
And there is also an Eris Society, a group of anarchists who meet on a yearly basis. I mean, these memes are pretty much out there, aren't they? Let's take a break for a moment, hear some music, and then come back and talk more about Kerry Thornley.
Woo! It's 50, a.k.a. Ferrari F50. Break it down. I got a lot of living to do before I die, and I ain't got time to waste. Let's make it. You never pop nothing. They say you a wankster, and you need to stop frontin'. You ain't a friend of mine,
yeah.
You ain't no kin of mine,
no.
What makes you think that I won't run up on you with the nine?
Uh-huh.
We do this all the time,
what?
Right now we on the grind,
yeah.
So hurry up and cop and go, we selling this and dime.
Uh-huh.
Shorty, she's so fine, I gotta make her mine. I ask like that, gotta be one of a kind. I crush him every time, punch him with every line. I'm fucking with their mind, I make them press the wine. They know they can't shine if I'm around the rhyme. Then I'm perusers 94 cause I committed crimes. I say in my line, I did it to the nine. The D's ran up in my crib, you know who's dropping down. You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. You say you a wankster, and you need to stop fronting. You go to the dealership, but you don't never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time and you ain't got nothing. You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. You say you a wankster, and you need to stop fronting. You go to the dealership, but you never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time and you ain't got nothing. Damn, homie, in high school you was the man, homie. The fuck happened to you? I got the sickest vendetta. When you come to the cheddar, nigga, you play with my paper. You gon' meet my Beretta. Now shawty think I'm a sweater. I'm sippin' on my Beretta. I'ma hit once and better. I know I could do better. She look good, but I know she after my cheddar. She tryna get in my pocket, tell me, and I ain't gon' let her. Be easy, start some bullshit, you get your whole crew wet. We in the club doing the same old two-step. Gorilla unit, cuz they say we bugged out. Cause we don't go nowhere without toast, we dug out. You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. We say you a wankster, and you need to stop running. You go to the dealership, but you never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got nothing. You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. You say you a wankster, and you need to stop running. You go to the dealership, but you never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got nothing. Me, I'm no mobster. Me, I'm no gangster. Me, I'm no hitman. Me, I'm just me.
Me,
me, I'm no wankster. Me, I'm no actor. But it's me you see on your TV. Cause I hustle, baby. Spat shit is so easy. I'm getting what you get for a brick. The tongue greasy. By any means, partner, I got to eat on these streets. And you play me close, for sure I'm gon' pop my heat. Niggas saying they gon' murk 50. How? We ride around with guns the size of Lil Bow Wow. What you know about AKs and AR-15s? Equipped with night vision, shell catches and M-beams, huh? You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. You say you a wankster, and you need to stop frontin'. You go to the dealership, but you never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got nothing. You say you a gangster, but you never pop nothing. You say you a wankster, and you need to stop frontin'. You go to the dealership, but you never cop nothing. You've been hustling a long time, and you ain't got nothing. Aha! Damn, homie.
Are you serious?
We're back with Adam Goritely talking about Kerry Thornley. And so in 1967, he attends a BN in Los Angeles. Didn't even know there was such a thing in Los Angeles. And he seems to be really high on the whole hippie scene. And then not very long after that, he described himself as starting to feel misanthropic, and he moves on. So as he gets into the 60s and so forth, and he's part of this Discordian movement, how does he manifest this prankster spirit that you speak of in the title?
Yeah, one of the unique things that came out of that, you had a lot of people, Louise, for instance, and Robert Anton Wilson, a few others, started developing this network of Discordians, and they pulled a lot of pranks or hoaxes. And one of them was the revival of the Bavarian Illuminati. And this exhibited itself basically with Robert Anton Wilson, was an author, a editor at that time of the Playboy Forum. And they, you know, he would take questions and answer them in the forum. So he and Kerry planted this letter that basically suggested that the Bavarian Illuminati had been behind all the major political assassinations in the late 60s, and basically planted this seed, and they started, they came up with this mock letterhead calling themselves the world's oldest existing conspiracy, the Bavarian Illuminati, and they started sending out these prank letters to the John Birch Society, for instance, and major religious organizations. Started putting that seed up there before they knew it. People on the left and the right started picking up on this meme about the Bavarian Illuminati. Kerry had started becoming interested in the Bavarian Illuminati, actually because during the Jim Garrison investigation, one of his researchers claimed that the Bavarian Illuminati was tied up in the JFK assassination. Kerry thought this was hilarious, and he said, okay, yeah, fine, I'm part of the Bavarian Illuminati.
So this prank got to be taken reasonably seriously by various groups, and went into various forms of common mythology. And then Kerry Thornley himself starts to become pretty paranoid. And he starts to take these conspiracy theories and so forth as seriously as the people who are accusing him.
Originally, Garrison claimed at one point that the Discordian Society was a front for the CIA. He had come across some literature that Thornley had on the Discordian Society, so he jumped to this conclusion. Later, Kerry started believing this himself in the early 70s as he started having these paranoid delusions, and he started suspecting that all of his friends at one time or another were part of the conspiracy. For instance, Robert Anton Wilson, they'd been pretty good friends over the years. Kerry eventually believed for a period of time that Wilson was actually his handler for the CIA and was basically programming him or mind-fucking him.
I can imagine, finding yourself at the center of such an important piece of history as the Kennedy assassination, and then combining that with the sort of prankster and psychedelic sensibility that one could, after a while, start to have an overblown sense of one's place in the cosmic drama.
And yet this was a time in which this was prime conspiracy time. This was when CIA actually did all the stuff that people hallucinate that they do now. You know, they were actually involved in covert ops and all kinds of crap.
One interesting thing, during the period when Kerry was in New Orleans and he supposedly met Oswald and all this stuff was going on, that same time he met a couple fellows named, one of them was Slim Brooks and the other was named Gary Kirsten, a.k.a. brother-in-law. And he had a lot of philosophical different conversations with these characters. They claimed to have involvement with the mob and the intelligence agencies, and one of their theoretical discussions was how to kill a president, and in particular JFK. At the time, Kerry thought, you know, these were just theoretical conversations. Fast forward to the early 70s, Kerry came across some material by a writer named A.J. Weberman claiming...
Not right away. A.J. Weberman was a yippie, actually.
When he was a yippie, and this was in the Yipster Times, where he saw this material claiming that E. Howard Hunt and some others were actually the three tramps in New Orleans, and he had some photo comparisons. Kerry got a hold of this material, saw the photos, and he immediately connected the picture of E. Howard Hunt to the fellow he had known in New Orleans by the name of Gary Kirsten, a.k.a. brother-in-law. That's kind of what got the things Will
said. Now that's cinematic, brother-in-law.
And so that's the period where he started getting heavy into these conspiracy theories, and they just seemed to, for whatever reason, he went off the deep end during that period. Now, some of his friends believe that there was something, for instance, Greg Hill believed there was something at the core of Kerry's conspiracies and theories, and that he might have been manipulated with and some type of MK Ultra program when he was in the military. Interestingly enough, when he was in Otsugi, Japan, was during the same period that E. Howard Hunt was working there, and it came out later in Rolling Stone that Otsugi was one of the bases where the CIA was testing MK Ultra drugs experimentations.
I was going to ask if it's possible that Kerry could have been a patsy of his own and being manipulated through. So the time frame kind of matches up with those MK Ultra experiments.
Yeah, and it appears that quite possibly Thornley and Oswald were both being manipulated as patsies in the JFK assassination.
Well, we're going to have to let you go in a few minutes, but talk about how it ended for Kerry Thornley.
There's different perspectives on this. You have anything to any input? Well, it ended sadly, you know, with he died of a very rare and strange disease in the late 90s. But it appears to me towards the latter part of his life, he came out of the problems. He was suffering with schizophrenia, so the schizophrenia wasn't so severe. And during the latter years, he lived in Little Five Points, and he was very active in the scene. It's kind of a counterculture scene there in the town of Little Five Points, and he was involved. For instance, a lot of the homeless kids there looked at him as sort of a father figure. Maybe father figure isn't the quite the correct term, because he was doodling some of the young ladies, but he was there.
Father figure in the Catholic kind of way.
Daddy figure. You
know. He had a big heart from everybody I talked to, and he was also at that time involved with pranks of a different sort. He got involved with a group there that was Secret Society of Clowns. I've came to discover later, and one of the pranks they did was about an amnesty program at the Super Bowl. They hung up these signs saying, "Bring your all your weapons to the Super Bowl and receive free tickets." And they posted, this was the year they had the Super Bowl in Atlanta, so different people picked up on this and brought all their weapons there to the Super Bowl to get in free. So he kept that through all his battles and struggles, I think, at
he
the end.
He kept a sense of humor. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great note to end on.
That was one thing, and a lot of people noted, I heard that time and again, for a paranoid schizophrenic, he was the only one I knew who always kept his sense of humor.
Well, that's a nice place to end it. how can people look up your books and give us your website address?
AdamGoRightly.com. Remember, you can't go wrong if you go rightly.
All right, thanks a lot. This has been Arya Sirius.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?